Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Paramount Plus and the National Park Foundation present A Mountain of Zen. This Earth Week, you can live stream seven national parks for 7 days on Paramount Plus. Paramount Plus, official streaming partner of the National Park Foundation.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Wolverine 24/7 podcast, your audio source for all things Michigan football, basketball, and recruiting. I'm your host, Zach Shaw. Steve Lorenz here with me. It is rivalry week for the Michigan football team. They host Michigan State Saturday night under the lights. Be on ABC for those watching on TV, but should be a pretty charged atmosphere. Should be fun. You know, I've been doing a lot of the preview stuff. There's certainly, you know, I always say this. I know Michigan and Ohio State are the biggest rivals on the football field, but I think among fans, and Steve, you can jump in if you disagree, I almost think Michigan and Michigan State fans hate each other more than Michigan and Ohio State fans. I think there's just so many, you know, families where there's alumni of two different schools, or so many workplaces where there's alumni of different schools. So it's been interesting, you know, as the media perspective, seeing all the different smack talk or the arguments or the discussion. Certainly a different kind of build up to this game than it was last season. Last season, it was top 10 matchup for both teams. Both teams were kind of enjoying renaissance seasons. This season, Michigan is 7-0. Michigan State is 3-4. Only Power 5 win was a double overtime win over Wisconsin. So a flawed team, but definitely a team in a bigger rebuild than I think, you know, even the biggest Michigan State critics would have necessarily expected this season. But we're going to talk about the keys for the Wolverines on both sides of the ball. Michigan is favored by a lot of points, but I saw the stat that in the last 54 years, Michigan has been favored in this matchup 49 times, and Michigan State has 15 wins as an underdog, including several as a double-digit underdog. So definitely still a matchup worth, you know, really digging in on and previewing. We'll start with Michigan's offense against a Michigan State defense that is outside the top 100 in every single pass defense category. But Steve, when I think about my biggest key, you know, I went into, when I started looking into Michigan State season, watching, you know, what they've done a little bit more closely, digging into the numbers, I kind of thought that they would have to pass to set up the run. But I think Michigan can honestly, as long as they own the trenches, I think they can do whatever they want offensively. You know, Minnesota got over 200 rushing yards, more than 5 yards a carry against the Spartans, and Ohio State did too. I think that I assume their game plan is going to be to try to stack the box and really, really stuff the run. So I don't think Michigan can be one-dimensional, but I'm kind of seeing a team that Michigan, I think the biggest key is avoid stepping on your own foot, avoid the turnovers. And I think as long as Michigan's offensive line comes to play and understands that it's going to be a more consistently physical matchup than a typical 3-4 team, right? Like if this weren't Michigan State, I think all of us outsiders would be predicting a 25-30 point victory for the Wolverines. But because it is Michigan State, you know, I anticipate it being more of a physical battle in the third quarter, in the fourth quarter, regardless of the score. So for me, I think it's pretty simple. Don't turn the ball over unnecessarily. And then also just own the trenches, because, you know, this is a Michigan State defense. This is not the same kind of defensive front that, you know, I think they're used to having. It's a little bit smaller. It's a little bit less experienced. Injuries haven't helped, you know, in terms of the results. But at the same time, against the teams on its schedule, particularly the good, you know, bowl trending Power 5 teams, this is a defensive front that's been pushed around a little bit. So, Steve, what's the biggest key offense in this matchup in your mind?
Yeah, I mean, there's always like that voodoo in this game. Particularly, honestly, even the last two seasons, games that Michigan realistically should have won handily. Yeah, I don't know. It'd be weird to see Michigan State try to stack the box with how poor their passing defense continues to be. But honestly, that still might be their best bet to create a turnover. Even really, I think maybe just play aggressively up front either way, blitz, stack the box. You know, my assumption is that they'll try they think this comes down to forcing McCarthy to into a few of those make water into wine type plays, and that they can snag a couple of them and try to capitalize. I mean, I'm guessing, because yeah, I've watched Michigan State a few games this season, and yeah, if this was any other team in the conference that Michigan was playing this week, I mean, outside of Ohio State, but just on the name, yeah, we would be discussing it a lot differently, I feel like, because Michigan State's going to have to play probably by far the best game they've played all season to have a shot at winning. It's just a fact. You know, it's like you read these press conferences about, you know, relishing in the underdog role, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, it's not a contrived stance to put them in the underdog role. I mean, they're there for a reason. So, yeah, Michigan, I think if you're Michigan, you keep doing exactly what you've been doing if you can. You know, I think it's quieted down a little bit, but I still don't quite get this, you know, that they have to open it up. I think somebody, maybe it was on the board, somebody made a comment that really stood out to me. I read it somewhere, was, you know, Michigan is doing to teams on the ground what Ohio State is just so beloved for doing to teams through the air. And, you know, you don't see Ohio State necessarily changing their identity in a given game just for the sake of changing their identity, you know? So Michigan is mashing up front. They look like the playbook is expanding. They'll have more ready for this week. Harbaugh's already said so. You know, I guess I'm just really in squarely in the, if it's not broke, don't fix it. I you'd think people would learn from the Washington game last year that this works. You know, and so I don't see Michigan State doesn't do anything so well that I think Michigan really needs to change any of their approach until maybe you get to game time. If Michigan State does show that they're capable of slowing it down, then you can change your path to victory. But even then, you know, McCarthy's still one of the most accurate passers in the country. It's just Michigan's offense is a tough matchup for anybody right now. I feel like I just don't really think there's any way you can deny that.
Yeah, I think the breadth of pass catchers as well. I mean, it's if you cover Ronnie Bell, they can go to Cornelius Johnson or Roman Wilson or Luke Schoonmaker or the running backs. I mean, it's a luxury, and that's what Michigan spent years trying to build. And certainly the run game is the star of the show so far. But you know what? One thing I will say, you know, because I think the natural argument to your point, Steve, is, how are you going to win in the playoffs if you don't have a prolific passing attack? And I think that's fair, but I think if you go look, and maybe this is a story to, you know, keep in the back of my mind to maybe do if Michigan continues on its trajectory. You know, I go back to J.J. McCarthy's quote against after the Penn State game, where he said, it's not air raid offenses that are winning the national title. Every single team that wins the national title has at least one very good running back. I mean, even LSU, I think a lot of people view that as maybe a true prolific passing attack. Clyde Edwards-Helaire was pretty darn good at running back too. You know, so it's, you do need to be able to run the ball. And if you're run first, I don't think that's disqualifying. Now, I think there is some element of, you don't want J.J. McCarthy and Michigan's passing attack, you know, say they fall behind 14-0 to Ohio State, and suddenly they don't know how to get out of that hole. So I don't think you want to ignore that deep ball passing or kind of that passing to win the game playbook. But at the same time, I'm with you. I think Michigan can go into this game wanting to be run first, and I think they're going to have success. Just some rankings where Michigan State's defense ranks. They're 64th in yards per carry, 80th in yards per game allowed rushing. In the passing game, they are 105th in yards, total yards per game, 102nd in total yards per play, 110th in passing yards per game, 114th in passing yards per attempt, 122nd in passer rating allowed, 124th in completion percentage allowed. Michigan is first offensively in completion percentage. So this is just, I think it's a real opportunity for Michigan to, I guess, show what it can do offensively. You know, there's some element of just make sure you're winning the game. Don't go crazy. But I do think if Michigan can avoid the turnovers and own the trenches, I think there's going to be a real opportunity here. We can keep talking about it, but I do want to throw in some over-unders. Let's start with this run game, since we're already on the topic. Over-under, these are from Neil, our good friend. He's via Zool97 on the message boards. But he says 219.5 rushing yards for Michigan in the game. Total rushing yards. I assume sacks will count as negatives, but at the same time, this is all the running backs and everything. I'm taking the over on this one. I think Michigan State, even if they do focus most on stopping the run, I think that there's going to be opportunities for Michigan to really put its foot down in the run game, more so than last season. I would argue more so than, you know, 2019, 2018. You know, I think Michigan State for a long time had great run defenses. I don't think this is a great run defense. So I'm taking the over. Steve, your thoughts?
I'm taking the over. I pretty much agree with everything you said there. I mean, watching how Michigan sort of owned Penn State schematically, I just feel like the run game is clicking on almost all of its cylinders right now. And it's just at some point, you know, and like I said, you talk about the voodoo, like at some point you have to see what you see in front of you and think, like, you know, hard not to see Michigan having success in the ground.
Yeah. I mean, and 219 or 220, I suppose, is not like a ton, especially if I think you and I, not to spoil it, but I think you and I both anticipate Michigan to win this game and hold a lead for much of the game. I mean, 220 is not that many for, you know, over the course of a game when you run the ball, say, 40 times. I think the one thing that will be interesting, Michigan State, they're not great against the run. They don't miss tackles, though. Like, this isn't Penn State. Penn State, one of the worst tackling. Actually, in Power 5 football, they are the worst team in the country at tackling in the run game. They have the most missed tackles per carry. I actually, for a project I'm doing about Michigan's run defense, I actually came across that stat. Michigan State's above average in that regard. So they're not going to, you know, it's not going to be like this, you know, yards per carry. I wouldn't necessarily predict 6, 7, 8 yards per carry ahead of the game. But at the same time, I think Michigan is going to be able to have success running the ball. I think it'll be a little bit like the Indiana game or the Iowa game where it might not be big plays, but I think I don't think there's going to be a ton of tackles for loss. Okay. Next one. Let's talk about the tight end. 79.5 receiving yards from all tight ends. Not that it's necessarily a surprise, but Eric Gall officially out for the season. Luke Schoonmaker has filled in pretty darn well. I think he's playing himself into an NFL draft situation, to be honest. But Steve, your thoughts? If at some point Michigan is going to pass, they threw the ball quite a bit in this game last season. You see how other teams are having success throwing the ball. Think about Maryland, Washington, Ohio State, even Minnesota had some success. Wisconsin didn't, but I would think Michigan's passing attack is better than Wisconsin's. So, Steve, your thoughts on, I mean, what do you see in this passing offense on Saturday? And do the tight ends alone get to 79.5 receiving yards? That feels like a high number to me, so I'm actually going to take the under, but what are your thoughts?
I took the under, too. Minnesota, like, I think Tanner Morgan was, like, 22 for 24 at one point in the game against Michigan State. So, you know, yeah, they're right up there with Maryland and Ohio State, honestly, as far as having success throwing the football. So, yeah, I don't know. I guess in a funny way, I think the only way Michigan gets over that is if, you know, they've been mixing Colston Loveland in more and more in passing downs at that spot. And, you know, they seem to be trying to design a couple plays to get him involved. So, you know, if they, maybe if they mix him in, they can get there. Otherwise, no, I think this will be a game where, yeah, I think that depth, that wide receiver and Edwards out of the backfield, I think is where Michigan will do more of their damage in the passing game.
Yeah, I think this is a game where, I mean, the completion percentage Michigan State allows really jumps out. But interestingly, I think this is a game where I don't know who it's going to be. But I think Michigan State's cornerbacks, they're among the worst. They might be the worst coverage cornerback duo in Power 5 football. I mean, there's different metrics you can use to measure that. But I think this is going to be an opportunity, if Michigan wants to really work the sidelines, work the perimeters, work downfield. I don't think that's necessarily Michigan's like go-to approach, but I do. It's a more efficient way to get downfield. You know, if you can complete those deep passes and you know, I think philosophically, I gotta think Michigan has something in the back of their minds. Winning is probably the first priority, but I would be surprised if Michigan coaches and the offensive players weren't kind of thinking, hey, if the Wolverines are able to build a lead, you know, do they try to pour it on, so to speak? So I'm intrigued about it. All right, last offensive over-under. Does the offensive line allow 5 tackles for loss? This feels like an easy under. Maybe I'm missing something numbers-wise. Michigan State, not terrible at tackles for loss, but they're 63rd. Nationally in tackles for loss per game. Michigan's offense is 32nd nationally in allowing tackles for loss per game. 5 negative plays, I guess it could happen, especially if Michigan's staying on the field as much as I anticipate. But I really felt like the offensive line really played Joe Moore Award level play against Penn State and give them a bye week chance to kind of recover. I don't know if it would be Trente Jones or Carson Barnhart, but, you know, they'd be more full strength, less dinged up. Boy, I'd be surprised if Michigan State got 5 tackles for loss or more. That would indicate to me that Michigan is unorganized offensively or isn't quite, you know, it's almost like missing assignments here and there. But Steve, how about you? 4.5 tackles for loss allowed by Michigan's offensive line.
Yeah, I mean, we've agreed on all 3 so far, but to me, they've been pretty easy to go with. I'm going under as well, just based on like history here, or just what these two teams have done and what they look like coming into this game. Because I agree, it's going to take some missteps for Michigan up front for Michigan State to hit that number. You know, not only like missing assignments and stuff, maybe, but like the other thing is like Michigan, they feel athletic enough, even at the quarterback position, to maneuver out of potential tackles for loss in certain situations. So, I'm gonna take the under on that one.
All right, that's going to do it for our offensive keys and over-unders. We'll take a quick break. On the other side, we'll talk about the defense, and we'll also give our final predictions for this game. You're listening to the Wolverine 24/7 podcast.
This is Tony Kornheiser's show. I'm Tony. You expected someone else? So what exactly is the show about? I don't know. It's a sports show nominally. Football's over, but we're finally at a point where things matter in college basketball, and baseball season is on deck. Greatest 3 words in the English language, pitchers and catches. We have some of the best voices come on and explain what matters or what makes an upset, like Ryan does, 9-8. No, that's not an upset. No, yeah, it is, Bob. And if you're lucky, I might just tell you about my search for discounted sleep pants or my worries about what my dog just ate. Listen on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
When you have sports mixed with your pop culture, along with humor and celebrity interviews, your earbuds are enjoying the Rich Eisen Show.
Dan Orlovsky, are you still a Jaden Daniels is the best quarterback available in the draft guy?
I think the 3 things that make it stand out for me are, number 1, I think his ball placement versus man coverage is the best in the draft. Every quarterback in the NFL is accurate. He's got the best on tape. Number 2, most transferable stuff to the NFL. And then I think the 3rd thing is pocket peace.
Search for the Rich Eisen Show on YouTube or wherever you listen.
And welcome back. Thanks for waiting. Steve, what's the biggest key for Michigan's defense in this game? I mean, it's clear Michigan State is clearly missing Kenneth Walker III. really feels in my mind statistically like a one-dimensional offense. But from what you've been able to see from the Spartans so far, what are the biggest keys for Michigan's defense in this matchup?
Not get whistled for pass interference, I guess. Am I the only one thinking that Michigan State's going to try to do this, run a similar thing to what they did in 2020?
I think they will
throw the ball up a lot, and the receiver makes an amazing catch or they get whistled.
And they're eighth nationally in penalty yards drawn per game.
See, yeah.
I think it's going to be similar to Indiana, because Indiana's right in that mix in terms of drawing penalties. It's a part of their game plan.
Yeah. Not knocking the game plan. I think that's what they're going to try to do. You know, looking at their running game, it's just hard to fathom them sustaining any kind of prolonged success in this game running the football, you know? So then you move to the air. Coleman and Reed might be their two best players, you know? So you try to get them the ball, and I think they're going to try to get as many 50-50 chances as they can give their guys and either make the grab or try to draw a flag out of it and just move the ball that way. So
what I've noticed when I see Michigan State's passing attack is there's a certain level of fearlessness. And I think part of it is that pass interference possibility. They don't need Reed or Coleman or Mosley to be like open to throw the ball. Like they'll give it a try downfield regardless. Roughly 1 in 6 passes for Michigan State. Actually, exactly 1 in 6 passes for Michigan State has been 20 or more yards downfield. And that's actually the highest rate Michigan has faced in Big Ten play this season. So I think even though, you know, I think a lot of teams have ignored Javon Green and DJ Turner, and they've kind of looked like almost seemed like islands in coverage at times, I don't think Michigan State's going to ignore them. I think they're going to really work those boundaries, try to get the ball in Reed and Coleman's hands, you know, try to kind of like the Penn State playbook a few years ago when they would just go for the 50-50 balls and have success with it too. I mean, both of those guys have pretty good rates on contested catches, are really among the Big Ten leaders in catching passes in traffic. So I think ultimately just not getting lulled into anything, right? I mean, if you're Jermon Green or DJ Turner and it doesn't seem like they're going to throw your way because you've been having success, don't fall into that sense of security. I mean, they might throw your way any down, any distance, any situation, even if you are doing well in coverage. So, you know, that's somewhere where Jermon Green struggled in 2020. If memory serves, it was a lot of those 50-50 balls tracking the ball. He is covering his man in the sense of he is in position, but there is some technique and some savvy to making a play on the ball coming your way without committing a penalty or allowing a big play. So yeah, I think that's really a big key. Probably the big key. I think the other one I can think of, you know, Michigan State, they do have good tight ends. And I do think, you know, this is a situation where if Michigan State's doing its homework, and history suggests that they usually do, you know, are they able to pinpoint something that in Michigan's defense that other teams haven't exploited as much as expected? I think tight end coverage might be one of them, and slot coverage as well with Trey Mosley. So it'll be interesting, because I think I said the same thing before the Penn State game, and Penn State really did not get the ball in Parker Washington's hands or Brenton Strange's hands. And then the next week, suddenly, you know, the tight ends and slot receivers for the Nittany Lions are going off. So maybe Michigan has solved this puzzle a little bit, but I have to think Michigan State is going to at least try, you know, those middle of the field, maybe the crossing route type coverage situations, test Michigan a little bit, see if they can get them out of position. Steve, anything jump out to you? I mean, last season, I think the big wild card or the wrench Michigan State threw in the game plan was going tempo. Anything jump out to you about what you've seen from Michigan State or Michigan that in a situation where Michigan State's probably going into this game with a quote unquote nothing to lose game plan, anything else jump out to you as something you have to be on guard for? I do think the penalty one will be interesting to see how Michigan, you know, do they get grabby when they're constantly having to go downfield in coverage. But anything else jump out to you?
Not in particular. Just because we you know, have not seen Michigan State run the ball that well against quality competition, you know, so it's just I can't fathom seeing them. Like, it's going to have to be pass first for them to open everything else up defensively. You know, whereas Michigan feels like Michigan will be able to run the football, or should be able to run the football well enough to open up some stuff for the play action. Just don't, again, and who knows, this game is always kind of the weird one. And if there's one thing, this game has a tendency to be kind of weird, but there's just nothing to suggest that Michigan State should not have to, should have to go anywhere but pass first and then try to open up the running game to create a little bit more balance. You know, and yeah, the 50-50 balls, the grabbiness, that's you know, we'll see how the game is called as well. That can make a difference. You know, I think a lot of Michigan fans would argue the 2020 game was called pretty tightly by the officials, but more so not because Michigan isn't grabby, but because they, under Zordich, they kind of always were grabby, just seemed to get away with it a decent amount, or it wasn't egregious. So, you know, that'll be kind of an interesting little thing to watch on the outside. But otherwise, yeah, I mean, I think Michigan State's going to have to pass first to have any success offensively. You know, I just, other, I always, the other thing I always go to is, you know, doesn't it just feel, you know, no running game or a difficult time running the football, you're going to be in a lot of second and eight, second and nine, or if you're passing and you're incomplete, second and tens. You know, it's just, I think a lot of this in these types of games comes down to winning first down, you know, and I think Michigan can play conservatively as far as defending Michigan State's passing game. Again, I always point to these, like between Mozzie Smith and Chris Jenkins, it just, Michigan has two elite run defenders in the middle. And then you have Jalen Harrell on the side, on the edge. You know, it's just Michigan's, like I said, that diversity of guys that Michigan has defensively has really allowed Minter to kind of maybe do more dictating than what defensive coordinators normally do. So, you know, yeah, it's going to be interesting to see if, is this a game where Michigan State, they get a couple big plays and then Michigan just, you know, I'm trying to find a path to victory for Michigan State. I guess it's got to be they hit on a few big plays and Michigan just really looks out of sync offensively. But if these two teams both play their best game, it's just hard not to see Michigan winning and comfortably.
Yeah, I think the one dimensional component, because I do think, you know, Jim Harbaugh, he said that he felt like Michigan State has the best receiving core Michigan has faced this season. I would argue Penn State and Maryland could probably be right in that conversation in terms of who they've faced so far. But I do get where he's coming from. It's not like this is a unathletic or untalented receiver room or receiver room who can't make plays. You know, I think Coleman's had a few drops, but at the same time, he's made up for it with some really nice 50-50 grabs. So it's, you know, Michigan's going to have to show up and, you know, going to have to be really effective in when Michigan State takes a shot, not giving up the free ones. If you get beat a couple times, fine. But this is really a situation where I think Michigan, like you said, as long as they don't trip up in coverage, they're going to win the aggregate war, so to speak. They might lose an individual play battle here and there, but they'll win the war in coverage. And then ultimately, without a run game, you know, Michigan's defensive front going to be able to, I guess, identify the play sooner. And we've seen, particularly in the third and fourth quarter of recent games for the Wolverines, when that happens, that's when the pass rush really starts to come alive. Solid or decent throughout much of the game, but then it really starts to ramp up in obvious passing situations. All right, let's knock out a few of these defensive over-unders. We'll have a full story with all 10 of them over on our message board over at the michiganinsider.com, michigan.247sports.com. On the run game, Michigan's leading rusher gets 49.5 yards rushing. Boy, this feels like an under. I know they had a little bit more success running the ball against Wisconsin, but Michigan is looking like a top four run defense in the country right now. I think you brought it up. I asked, you know, Jesse Minter about it yesterday. Mozzie Smith, Chris Jenkins, just every single run play, they are making a difference. Whether they make the tackle or not, it is almost impossible for other teams to run the ball up the middle against those two. And you know, they're big, they're strong, they're crafty, they're experienced. You know, I think they're getting better at the shedding blocks portion. I think for a long, you know, they were space eaters or space movers, whatever you want to call it, for a while. Now they're starting to get off those blocks and even get off a couple double teams. I thought Mozzie Smith started to do that. Yeah, they're stopping everything up the middle. And so, for me, it's hard to imagine Jalen Berger, Jarek Broussard, Elijah Collins. Part of it's that they might rotate all three. I mean, Berger's the main guy, but you know, all three are going to get carries. I don't think any of them get to 50 yards. Steve, how about you? I mean, is this a game where I guess one or two plays could make the difference here, whether even if it's like late in the game, but your thoughts?
I did say over on this one. I don't think it'll be anything way over that number. I think one of the two guys that they like to give the ball to will get somewhere like a 54, 55 yard type deal. Aggregate, like that's a good word. Don't think they're going to sustain any success running the ball. I think maybe a couple 10, 15 yard runs, and then they keep trying to run the ball and get there.
In their five Power Five games so far this season, they have not run for more than 100 yards, and they ran for 42 against Washington, 38 against Minnesota, and 7 against Ohio State. The only team that they averaged more than 2.75 yards per carry against was Maryland, where they got to 100 yards on the nose on 4.5 yards per carry. So feel like Michigan's going to be able to have some success against the run. All right, how about Jaden Reed's 5.5 catches over under? We've talked about him quite a bit. He's been around the block a few times. This is not, you know, he's been a part of this rivalry for a while. Clearly a favorite target of Peyton Thorne. Although Keon Coleman's starting to get a pretty good amount of targets too, but does Jaden Reed get 6 or more catches in this contest?
Yeah, I say over. I think he's going to be the guy they try to feed. You know, I mean, Coleman as well, obviously, but Reed is their number one guy. I think they try to feed him the ball as much as possible, so I'm going to say over.
Yeah, who was it? Was it Aaron Burbridge back in 2015? They targeted him like 19 times. Different coach, different quarterback, different receiver, different defense. I mean, different everything, but it does feel like in 2020, really every year that they didn't have Kenneth Walker III, there has been a big emphasis on getting the ball to their talented receivers, because they often do have talented receivers. And Jaden Reed is one of them. I guess just so we can disagree a little bit, I might take the under on this one. I think Michigan will be prepared for that matchup. And even if they target him 10 times, I mean, do we expect Reed to come down with 6 of them? I mean, I feel like that would maybe be an indication that DJ Turner or Jermaine, I don't know who they would match up against him, but maybe not having their best day in coverage. So I'm going to take the under, although that's feels like I'm ripe to be wrong on that one. All right. Last one, 0.5 more passing yards for Peyton Thorne versus Michigan State punting yards. So far this season, Michigan State has been very good at punting. Their punter is averaging more than 51 yards per punt. I think in the overall season total, I think he's close to Thorne in yards. So does Michigan State, if he averages 50 yards a punt, theoretically 5 punts would be 250 yards. Thorne, we expect him to throw the ball a lot. So this might be a testament to how effective we think Michigan will be in that pass defense. Who has more yards? Michigan State's punter, Bryce Behringer, or quarterback Peyton Thorne.
I think when I sent it to you, I said the opposite of whatever you said. I think the punter has more yards. Just because he's, I mean, punts five times, 50 a pop, 250. I don't know. Am I crazy? Like, I feel like he's been their best player. And I don't mean that as a knock. I mean, he could be the best punter in the country.
Just so you have the number in front of you, he is averaging 220.3 punting yards per game. Peyton Thorne is averaging 214 passing yards per game.
Yeah, no wonder that was the over-under. Yeah, I think the punter has more.
Yeah, I'm kind of leaning that way as well. I mean, I think I would be surprised if he had fewer than 200 punting yards. I think that would suggest that Michigan State had pretty good success against Michigan moving the football, because that would indicate that he did not punt more than four times. And then I also think I would be surprised if Thorne threw for 250 yards. And maybe that's me not being aware of what Michigan State's about to bring on Saturday. I've been wrong previewing this matchup before. I don't feel like he's going to throw for 250 or over 225. And I think Michigan State's going to have to punt five times in the game. So, yeah, I'm going to go with the punter for this one. All right, Steve, your final thoughts on this game? Anything you haven't mentioned yet or want to mention before the game kicks off? And your final prediction for this game?
No excuse for Michigan here. They've lost the last two. They're a better football team. This is a game where, if they don't pull this off, it'll be another – I think it's a case of it being mental more than anything. There's really nothing on paper that suggests that Michigan State can win this football game. And that's okay as far as it pertains to the rivalry. I think Michigan, it feels like there's better focus here. But again, I mean, Michigan looked really good heading into East Lansing last year. We've seen now how big of an impact Kenneth Walker had on Michigan State. I mean, you're seeing what he's doing in the NFL already. Special player. They don't have another one of those guys on their offense or defense. So, like I said, path of victory for Michigan State would be connecting on some deep 50-50s, couple scores in the red zone, and Michigan really just kind of laying an egg offensively. I don't foresee that happening. So still picking Michigan State to cover. So I'm going Michigan 35. I'm doing a normal person score this week. Michigan 35, Michigan State 17.
Tired of being embarrassed about your arcane scores?
No, just
okay. I heard you got called out about it. So
a few times. That's all right. It's okay. Yeah. 40. What's wrong with 43-12?
All right. I agree with a lot of what you're saying, and I especially the part where this game will tell us a little bit about Michigan between the ears, because I think this is a little bit more of a mental matchup than a physical one. If this were Indiana and they had the same season on paper, I think every reporter predicting this game would expect Michigan to win by 30 plus, especially at home, especially at night. But it is Michigan State. They are going to bring their best game. And I know that gets said all the time about this rivalry, but honestly, until it's disproven, I take it as fact. I take it as something that they do. That said, Steve, I always do like a pretty in-depth scouting report for our site, looking at, all the different personnel. And what I always find is usually I come away with more respect for the team that I don't cover, because I see, some of the key players, I see, some of these stats, and I'm like, oh man, they're pretty good at this, or they're pretty good at that. This is the one time I really came away thinking, I came into the scouting report or the research or the study approach that I do kind of thinking Michigan State was being overlooked. I no longer think that. I think this is a lot more like the 2019 matchup between these two teams than what it felt like 2020 and 2021. I mean, last season, I think people expected Michigan to win. It was a road game against a top 10 team. Like, it's not like Michigan State was 4-4 at that point. Like, they were pretty darn good themselves. They were undefeated. And, you know, in 2020, I think ultimately it just proved, you know, Michigan, you saw the rest of their season. That was clearly, that game came before Michigan was revealed to be the team that they were. So, you know, I think ultimately this is just a game where Michigan's going to have to hold off. You know, they're going to have to show their culture. They're going to have to show that they take this rivalry seriously, but also don't overexert, you know, committing the penalties or getting flustered if something goes wrong. I think we'll learn more about Michigan mentally than, or between the ears, than what we will, you know, on the field in this matchup based on how they perform. Because this is, this feels like Michigan's game to win. And after all the, all I've been able to see and learn about Michigan State, I think it will be Michigan's game to win. I've got them winning 38-10. I've got them covering. I think, I don't know that it'll necessarily be early and often in terms of the scoring, but I do think Michigan, much like they have throughout the season, will start to really win out in the second half of the game. You know, I think their trench advantage on both sides of the ball is just too significant. I mean, you can play all the mind games you want. You are going to have to block and tackle up front. And I think Michigan's going to be able to do that. So I've got Michigan 38, Michigan State 10. Obviously, they play the game, so be sure to read all of our preview coverage over at the MichiganInsider.com, Michigan.247sports.com. We'll also be on the scene providing live updates before, during, and after the game. For Steve Lorenz, I'm Zach Shaw. This has been the Wolverine 24/7 podcast. We'll see you after the game.
The baseball season is in full swing, which means you need to listen to Fantasy Baseball Today, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Scott White, Chris Towers, and me, Frank Stample, every weekday as we recap every player from every game. We'll talk waiver wire ads, drops, players to trade for, prospects who could make an impact, and everything in between. Make sure to download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Odyssey app, and everywhere else podcasts are found.